States and Russia hold high-level strategic talks as Moscow blasts the U.S. president's latest anti-Russia remarks. The U.S. imposes new sanctions on several Syrian individuals and entities over alleged human rights abuses. The United Nations warns that Ethiopia's war-torn Tigray region risks running out of food supplies. That's also in the headlines. World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, top story this hour, senior US and Russian officials have restarted nuclear talks and agreed to reconvene in September amid rising tensions between the two countries. The head of the Russian delegation at the summit reportedly said the United States showed readiness for constructive dialogue. The meeting in Geneva followed a verbal spat between US President Joe Biden and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. Biden accused Putin of seeking to disrupt the 2022 congressional elections by spreading what he called misinformation. The Kremlin, however, roundly rejected the claim. Now, earlier this month, Russia warned that relations between the two countries are nearing a dangerous confrontational threshold. The rising tensions are due to disagreements over arms control, cyber terrorism, and several other issues. Jason Inoue is a political commentator and joins us now. Jason, welcome. When you look at the quotes by President Biden, he says, look at what Russia's doing already about the 22 election and misinformation, and that's it. Just to be on the safe side, he also says pure violation of our sovereignty, without elaborating any further. Do you think there's a fear that perhaps if the Democrats don't do well, as we saw with the Republicans 4 years ago, perhaps, or 2 years ago, if they don't do well, let's blame it on the Russians?
I think that's probably what they're going to do again. I think the United States has shown that it has a definite history of essentially blaming others for their own actions. I mean, we saw that when originally Hillary Clinton had lost the election against Donald Trump, there was an immediate blaming of Russia, despite the fact that the actual testimony of the investigation actually revealed the opposite, that someone had been inside the actual headquarters and had copied data via USB. Later on, there was a court case against the Democratic Party, which involved Debbie Wasserman Schultz, in which Bernie Sanders was actually removed from his position where he was about to win. So, and then when Donald Trump didn't win the election, he alleged some kind of evil satanic conspiracy. This seems to be the way the United States wants to perform all of their elections now. To when they don't win, they just blame it on something nonsensical. I mean, it's still a little bit silly to blame Russia for the recent losses, but they didn't show any evidence of that.
Right. And well, on that note, Jason, he is Biden. Many experts would say that President Biden, he is the president. He can declassify anything that he wants, whenever he wants. So where is the evidence, in your opinion?
In my opinion, there really is no evidence. That's one of the great things about the allegations of hacking and putting out misinformation. You don't have to prove anything. In fact, I would believe that there would be a great deal of false information put out by people who support Trump. And they have done so quite openly on television, on the internet, social media influencers, etc. So we very clearly have people who do put out misinformation, who are just regular average citizens of the United States, some of them even paid by Republican think tanks. Yet you can't prove or show any evidence that Russia was involved. They could say, oh, there was a troll farm in another country that somebody hired. Well, who hired them? Just because that was in another country doesn't mean that that country had something to do with it. It's all an elaborate blame Russia because they're our primary enemy at this time due to a great deal of issues such as the gas pipeline, the ongoing situation in Ukraine, et cetera. It's essentially, it's an accusation that cannot be proven or disproven, so we just have to take the United States' word for it.
Fair enough. Jason, thank you very much indeed for that. Jason Anruhe there, political commentator, joining us live out of Niagara Falls. Now, the U.S. Treasury Department has slapped new sanctions on several Syrian individuals and entities. The department imposed bans on 8 Syrian prisons and 5 senior officials who control the sites over what it described as human rights abuses. Washington has intensified its sanctions campaign on Syria, targeting individuals and businesses in the Arab country. Damascus has said the U.S. measures aim to hamper efforts to revive Syria's economy that has been devastated by years of U.S.-backed militancy. Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Baqir Gharibov, has visited Syria for talks with top officials there on further expansion of economic cooperation between the two sides. Our correspondent, Mohammad Ali, reports from Damascus.
Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Baqir Gharibov, has met Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said that Iran is a main partner for Syria, which offered its support in all sectors. He asserted that ongoing coordination for fighting terror had a positive impact on the ground and will continue until the liberation of all Syrian territories. Gharibov said the Syrian and Iranian people's determination to participate in the recent presidential elections in the two countries proves the failure of policies of pressure adopted by their enemies. Gharibov held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud Sabbagh. He said military and political relations with Syria are currently in their strongest and best form, expressing willingness to enhance economic cooperation with Syria.
After their failure in military war against Iran, the Zionist and U.S. regimes have waged an economic war against us. Our joint priority now is to achieve development in our countries, improve our economy, restore the infrastructure, and increase the bulk of mutual trade exchange.
Sabbagh referred to the high level of coordination between parliaments of Iran and Syria, affirming that the two countries stand together in the resistance alliance, working to eliminate hegemony and colonialism, which their enemies are imposing on the region.
We held a very special and important meeting for further coordination between both parliaments through consultations and the exchange of expertise. We also agreed on activating the work of our friendship committees in the two parliaments for the benefit of the two peoples.
Speaker Gharibov also held talks with Syria's Prime Minister Hussein Arnous. They underlined the importance of expansion of economic cooperation in both public and private sectors for facing economic sanctions, as well as the siege imposed on the Iranian and Syrian people. The exchange of visits between Iranian and Syrian officials reflects the strong historic ties between the two countries. There has been a noticeable development in economic, political, military, and parliamentary cooperation since the start of the war on Syria, which represents an alliance both states are strengthening to counter U.S. and Western pressure against them. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Now, Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank town of Beit Omar, located north of El Khalil. The Palestinian Health Ministry said the 12-year-old Mohammed Muayyad Al-Alami died of gunshot wounds to his chest. He was killed after Israeli soldiers opened fire at a car he was riding in. Palestinian media described the attack as unprovoked. The incident comes less than 24 hours after a 41-year-old man succumbed to injuries after being targeted by Israeli forces in the town of Beita, north of the occupied West Bank. A new report says Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian minors with no recourse or accountability. The report by the Defense for Children International Palestine added that the children killed did not pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers. Tamona Kandil has more in this report.
Palestinians accused Israel of using unjustified deadly force against Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank. In its latest report, Defense for Children International Palestine stated that the Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian children with no recourse or accountability. In its report, DCI Palestine revealed that evidence it has obtained shows children killed didn't pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. The group says that Israeli forces used lethal force against Palestinian children in circumstances that may amount to extrajudicial or willful killing.
Killing unarmed minors amounts to war crime and even crime against humanity. Israeli soldiers act in line with shoot-to-kill policy, opening fire to kill Palestinian children. The troopers know their military establishment will hold any of them accountable for killing innocent Palestinians.
On Friday, a 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Mohammed Tamimi, was fatally shot by live ammunition in his back during a peaceful anti-settlement protest that was held in Nabi Saleh town, West Ramallah. Meanwhile, on Monday, a 17-year-old Yusuf Nawaf Mhareb, a resident of the Ramallah area village of Abwin, succumbed to wounds he had sustained a prayer when he was shot in the neck by Israeli forces during a protest against Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip. Experts say that under international law, the use of lethal force during a protest is allowed only when a direct and lethal threat to life or of serious injury exists. And as usual, Israel continues violating international law, including rules which limit the intentional lethal use of firearms, in particular against children.
Israeli forces have a twofold purpose by targeting Palestinian children. First, they want to intimidate Palestinian children to prevent them from taking part in anti-Israeli activity. And second, to oppress the Palestinians in general, to impose and strengthen the Israeli military control.
Since the beginning of the year, 10 Palestinian minors were killed in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces using live ammunition. Palestinians accuse Israel of using unjustified force against their children. They even warn that Israeli soldiers will continue killing children in cold blood as long as they won't face inquiry. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
The United Nations has called for the opening of critical aid routes in Ethiopia's war-torn Tigray, warning that the region risks running out of food supplies. The UN's humanitarian agency, OCHA, said in a statement that about 150 trucks with food and other supplies are being held in the city of Sumeria. Access into the region was cut off last week after the only available route for aid delivery was made inaccessible following an attack on a World Food Program convoy. The region has been the scene of fighting between army forces and rebels. Hundreds of people have been killed and tens of thousands of others displaced since the conflict began last November. Sudan's authorities warn that about the rising number of Ethiopian refugees crossing the Sudanese border. This comes after Ethiopia's federal government declared a unilateral ceasefire with the rebellious forces in the northern region of Tigray. Correspondent in Khartoum has more in this report.
3,000 of Ethiopian refugees crossed the Sudanese borders on Monday, arriving at Taya village at Basunda locality in Gadarif state. Reports say the refugees is considered the biggest number of refugees to cross into the country in only one day since the outbreak of war last November in Tigray region. Many believe that the wave may worsen security and humanitarian situation in the region due to armed conflicts erupting at western area of Ethiopia.
Sudan has adopted an open-door policy in receiving Ethiopian refugees since the beginning of the conflict. So far, Sudan has welcomed about 75 to 80,000 refugees. We call on the international community to help us meet the needs of the increasing refugees fleeing from the fight in the Tigray region.
Since the beginning of fighting, tens of thousands of Ethiopians have sought safety in Sudan. But conditions in Sudan refugee camps are presenting a new challenges, as Sudanese NGOs early responded to humanitarian situation in states affected of refugees influx.
Actually, since the crisis of the refugees started, the Tigray crisis started, Sudanese Red Crescent has been present from day one. And that is basically because we do have our ongoing activities in the region through our branches in Kassala and Gadarif. So we do have ongoing programs for the already existed old refugees in the area. So with the beginning of the crisis, we were already on the ground.
In the light of the latest development in the Tigray region, UN agencies strive to maintain a strong staff presence, provided there is access in Hamadayet in case there is an increased influx. Several partners continue to remain on the ground in anticipation of this possibility.
Security and health challenges face Sudanese and Ethiopian governments to cope with increasing number of refugees. Khartoum says it is still waiting for international support to tackle the crisis. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
Staying in the region, a Kaduna State High Court has set free prominent Muslim cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Saksaki and his wife Malama Zina of all the charges after nearly 6 years in detention. Danjuma Abdullahi has the details from Kaduna in northern Nigeria.
Sheikh Ibrahim El Zazaki and his wife.
Addressing the press, a member of Zazaki's defense team said the Kaduna State High Court discharged and acquitted Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat of all 8 charges in a ruling that lasted for several hours. The judge ruled that the prosecution has failed to establish any case against the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria and his wife.
The court ruled that the charge ought not to be in the first place. You cannot arraign a man for an offense that was allegedly committed, as at the time the said crime was not an offense. And the court was very emphatic in that yes, the Kaduna State government has powers to enact laws, but they cannot enact laws to prosecute an offense retrospectively.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat were arrested in December 2015 following an attack on his home and worship center by soldiers of the Nigerian army, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of Zazaki's supporters. In a statement, the Islamic movement said the judgment is a vindication of Sheikh Zazaki and a victory for truth and justice against tyranny and oppression.
The events of December 12th and 15th of 2015 were orchestrated by state machineries who are using the instrumentalities of state apparatus to fight a religious fight. It is strictly, the events of December 12, 2015, is strictly a fight between Shiites and Sunnis, fights that was imported from Saudi Arabia for whatever purpose.
The Kaduna State High Court has set Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat free. The Islamic movement, and indeed many of Zazaki's supporters, have expressed happiness with the outcome of this judgment. Danjuma Abdullahi, Kaduna.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Celebrates the divine appointment of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as Prophet Muhammad's vicegerent and successor. We here at Arabi English Radio congratulate all our Muslim listeners on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Qadir.
زیارت قدیر. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Salam, dear listeners. Here is the second part of the memorable ziyara of Qadir, or standard form of salutation to the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, the first part of which we presented to you yesterday. Stay tuned. My Master, Your Excellence cannot be hidden, and Your light cannot be extinguished, and those who repudiate You are the most unjust and wretched of creatures. My Master, You are Allah's testament to His servants, and His guide to rectitude, and a provision for the Day of Resurrection. My Master, Allah has certainly exalted Your station in this world, and elevated your rank in the hereafter, and He enabled you to perceive that to which your opponents were blind, and who became an obstacle between you and Allah's gifts to you. May Allah's curse be on those who violated your sanctity and usurped your right, and I affirm that they were the greatest losers. The fire will scorch their faces, and they will be morose in it. I testify that you never advanced, nor stepped back, nor spoke, nor were silent, except by the command of Allah and His Prophet. And you said, By Him in whose hand is my soul, the Messenger of Allah, may Allah bless him and his household, saw me striking with the sword at the battlefront, whereupon he said to me, O Ali, your position in relation to me is that of Aaron in relation to Moses, except that there shall be no prophet after me. I am informing you that your life and death is with me and in accordance with my sunnah. By Allah, I do not lie, nor what I have been told is a lie. Neither have I gone astray, nor have I been misled, nor have I forgotten the pledge my Lord has given me. Indeed, I am on a manifest proof from my Lord, which He has clarified for His Prophet, and the Prophet has clarified it for me, and I am indeed on a clear road, word by word. By Allah, what you have said is true, and by Allah, what you have stated is the truth. So may Allah's curse be upon those who equate you with those who dissociated themselves from you. Allah may glory be to His name, says, Are those who know equal to those who do not know? May Allah's curse be on those who equate you with those who were obligated by Allah to submit to your wilayah. You are Allah's wali, brother of His Prophet, and defender of His religion, and you are the one whose merit has been declared by the Quran. Allah the Most High has said, And Allah has graced those who wage jihad over those who sit back with a great reward, ranks from Him, forgiveness and mercy, and Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful. And Allah the Most High has said, Do you regard the providing of water to Hajj pilgrims and the maintenance of the holy mosque as similar in worth to someone who has faith in Allah and believes in the last day and wages jihad in the way of Allah? They are not equal with Allah, and Allah does not guide the wrongdoing lot. Those who have believed and migrated and waged jihad in the way of Allah with their possessions and persons have a greater rank near Allah, and it is they who are the triumphant. Their Lord gives them the good news of His mercy and His pleasure, and for them there will be gardens with lasting bliss to remain in them forever. With Allah indeed is a great reward. I testify that you were singled out by Allah for acclaim. You were exclusively dedicated to obeying Allah, never seeking any substitute for guidance, and never associating anyone in the worship of your Lord, and that Allah the Most High answered regarding you the prayer of his Prophet, may Allah bless him and his family, and then commanded him to proclaim that which he had bestowed upon you for the sake of his Ummah, in order to exalt your station, to promulgate your testament, to refute falsehoods, and to preclude all excuses. So when he was apprehensive of the seditions of the evildoers and was wary of the hypocrites on your account, the Lord of the worlds revealed to him, O Prophet, proclaim that which has been sent down to you from your Lord, and if you do not, you will not have conveyed his message, and Allah shall protect you from the evil of the people. Thereupon he made the caravan halt and bring down its burdens in mid-journey, and rose in the intense heat of the day of Ghadir to deliver a sermon, calling upon them to listen and crying out to them to communicate Allah's edicts. Then he asked their assembly, have I delivered? They said, yes indeed. Whereat he said, Allah be witness. Then he said, am I not more entitled to direct the affairs of the faithful than themselves? They answered, yes indeed. Then he took your hand and declared, of whomever I am master and guardian, this Ali is his master and guardian. O Allah, befriend those who befriend him, and be the enemy of those who are his enemies. Help those who help him, and forsake those who forsake him. Yet none except a few believed in what Allah had revealed concerning you, and it did not increase the majority of them except in loss. Indeed, Allah had formerly revealed concerning you something which they regarded with aversion. O you who have faith, should any of you desert his religion, Allah will soon bring a people whom he loves and who love him, who will be humble towards the faithful, stern towards the faithless, waging jihad in the way of Allah, not fearing the blame of any blamer. That's Allah's grace, which he grants to whomever he wishes. And Allah is all bounteous, all knowing. Your guardian is only Allah, his Prophet, and the faithful who maintain the prayer and give the zakat while bowing down. Whoever takes for his guardians Allah, his Prophet, and the faithful, should know that the Hizbullah are indeed the victorious.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
A Muslim
lady. You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. I'm here in the studio with my darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, my more dear sister and friend, Sister Zainab.
We're discussing some really important, fascinating, and helpful points and hacks regarding pre-pregnancy preps, problems and issues both men and women face regarding their reproductive systems and private parts. We're focusing specifically these last few episodes on problems and illnesses men could be afflicted with, and Islamic and traditional, often homemade, easy, over-the-counter remedies that we can try out, inshallah ta'ala, to solve these problems. We've been discussing impotency on Muslim Lady for the last few episodes, and it's important to talk about it because, yeah, well, you know, a Muslim lady...
These days, many men have this problem of impotency. We talked about points about the man's reproductive system, infections, and psychological issues, spiritual issues that men have to take into consideration. We're in the program of Muslim Lady, but as we said, a woman needs a partner, a healthy partner, in order to have a healthy offspring.
Right.
The health issues of a man is as important as the health issues of a woman.
Definitely.
We talked about problems of impotency in men. One very important factor which leads to men's infertility is the problem of mumps, you know, the sickness of mumps. So mumps is a viral infection that primarily affects the salivary glands that are located near your ears. If boys are inflicted with this kind of
infection,
disease or infection, parents have to be extra careful because the temperature of the testicles rise, and this will lead somehow
long-term
to their
problems.
Long-term infertility problems in men.
Right.
Because too much heat or temperature kills the sperms, right? And you have to be very careful. Or any kind of damage to the testicles.
Naturally.
Yeah.
It will damage the system.
Yeah, damage the whole reproductive system in men. So you guys have to be very careful, right? According to medicine, even to medicine, it's been medically proven that men who wear tight underwears or tight pants, it creates problems in the reproductive system, in the reproductive organ, in their sperm production. Several jobs or occupations, such as drivers, people who work in mines, in humid places, in very hot places, they will have to be very careful because they are more confronting, more prone to
these ailments and these problems.
Yeah. One more point, too much cigarettes, smoking.
Nicotine
would also lead in infertility in men. We have almost completed the topic on men's reproductive system problems and solutions to them. And inshallah, up next is we're going to talk about women's reproductive system. And also, inshallah, we'll be talking about sources that we've used. We are using various sources in these series of programs, one of which is the book written by a lady called Zobeide Khodai.
Mm-hmm.
She has several volumes of books on traditional medicine. One of them is, Oh God, How Can I Have a Healthy and Virtuous Child? The other source that is available is The Green Pharmacy by James A. Duke. The other very important source is the Book of Qanun of Avicenna.
Mm.
I don't know how they translate it in English.
Right.
So these are three very good sources that are used for our programs.
We're going to be talking about how women can have proper self-care routine in order to take care of their reproductive systems and prepare themselves for conception in order to have sound, healthy, intelligent babies. And of course, since we discussed certain home, simple, off-the-counter remedies for men and their specific ailments, we're probably going to be discussing those topics from this point onward as well.
Because the uterus of a woman is only a couple of grams.
Right.
And then during the process of pregnancy,
it becomes huge.
It becomes huge and has to be able to hold up to 3, 4, 5 kilogram baby.
Or even more for those who have triplets,
exactly,
or quadruplets.
Right. Specifically in the 10 weeks of pregnancy. So she will have to have a very healthy body, particularly taking into consideration the fact that When women have some deficiencies, like vitamin deficiency, iron deficiency, the baby doesn't wait.
Yeah, he just eats whatever's available.
Exactly. It takes from your savings, from your reserves of body. For example, if you don't have enough calcium in your body, the after pregnancy, your teeth are all rotten. You have
aches in your bones,
exactly.
Your joints.
So it's very important that if you want to be a happy woman, healthy woman, and mother, and wife,
right. You
have to be extra careful with your self-care, with your nutrition, with your diet. And don't take it as something that, it will just happen and, my body will provide for it. You will have to plan. You will have to eat based on a specific routine and mindful
with awareness.
Diet.
Right, definitely. And especially because as women, we go through that process of our body literally just sheds itself of all its resources once a month. Naturally, I haven't met a single woman who didn't have, by default, iron deficiencies or calcium deficiencies or some sort of vitamin B deficiency, because it's going to happen to us either way. And if we're not extra careful in our diet and, like you said, our self-care, once we get to that point in our lives where we want to bring life to this world, it's like we have to compromise, right? Either I won't be able to give the best and the fullest to that new life, or I'm going to put my life at risk.
Exactly. And sometimes you have to be careful not to give birth to a child with physical problems.
Yeah.
Some lack of vitamins and supplements in your body will lead to a baby with a lot of
deformities
and handicaps, right?
Yeah.
So these are very, very important. So the topic of nutrition and self-care is even more important and more significant when it comes to a woman, as she's carrying another human being, another life. She's the source of growth of a totally new creation inside her body. So she has to be extra careful of this, this extra living creature that is going to live in your body for 280 single days. And when you go to the Quran, ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَاهُ نُطْفَةً فِي قَرَارٍ مَكِينٍ. And then we put that nutfa, or that embryo, or that new creation, that new life, in a secure resting place, which is the body of a woman.
Beautiful. It's like our first home. All that and much more here on Muslim Ladies. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you for joining us again on Muslim Lady. I am here in the studio with my darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. It's so miraculous the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has designed the woman's body to produce an organ. It creates this whole new organ to house that baby inside itself and protect it and shield it and nurture it and raise it till it reaches that
full growth,
and it's ready to come into this world.
Subhanallah.
It's so mind-blowing. So imagine the care and the awareness you have to put into creating a whole new organ in order to house a whole new life.
Creation, exactly. And it's interesting how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has guarded it in, because it's been surrounded by
the other organs,
the ribs,
right?
and organs.
Yeah.
It's an internal organ, again, surrounded by other helping soldiers in order to keep that guest safe for 280 days, right? These are just, when you pay attention to all these complications, intricacies,
yeah,
to these details, they just blow your mind up, right?
They really do.
So the most important organ in a woman's body in the reproduction of a child, one of them is the uterus, then we have the fallopian tube, and then we have the ovaries.
Yeah.
So these are three main key organs that are
defined involved as reproductive organs.
Exactly. And when you're talking about the uterus, you're talking about a kind of pear-shaped small organ that only is 4 to 5 centimeters long and weighs about 80 grams, not even 100 grams. The interesting thing is that it's hanging. It's not in a fixed place in the body of a woman.
Right.
It's hanging through two tubes, the fallopian tubes. So it has the ability to move a little bit.
Right.
And it's not fixed in its place, right? And something that a lot of girls are dealing with, just as we have the problem of impotency in men, we have the problem of irregular menstrual cycles in girls and women, which also causes infertility. And or they are problems in the course of, you know, they create problems in the pregnancy, like, of a woman.
And create excessive frustration.
Exactly.
Especially for Muslim ladies, the whole calculating process, when can I shower, when can I pray?
Exactly.
Why am I late? Why is it abnormal again?
Exactly. So it's really, all these are said to bring to your attention the fact that how you can help your body to have a healthier body, the way your lifestyle is, what you eat,
your state of mind
and your spiritual state are all effective factors in the health of this organ, specifically
and vice
the uterus.
Versa. And vice versa. I mean, well, like when this organ contracts any sort of illnesses, you see it. You see how much it messes a woman up.
Exactly.
Or
all
like
the hormones. And
yeah,
everything.
The hormones that kick up a storm, or when a woman is close to her menopause, and it's basically when this specific organ is no longer of use, she goes through this whole whirlpool of changes and things that we would consider as abnormalities, but it's just a natural part of her life now. And
that's why we have a gynecologist.
Yeah, women, exactly.
There's a specific doctor women need for their sexual organ system,
reproductive
system,
yeah.
Right? Which men don't.
Mm.
All because of the complications and sensitivity of a woman's body is more than a man's body.
Definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the point that I wanted to say.
Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Muslim Lady. We've been talking about certain problems. We haven't exactly delved into it in depth, but we completed our discussion regarding male's impotency, and we started upon certain reproductive system illnesses that women could contract and the complications it would create in the long term and in the reproduction process. Inshallah ta'ala, in further episodes of this show, we'll be discussing these topics furthermore. Make sure to tune in. Until then, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the love of
Allah?
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The latest data from the UK Office for National Statistics shows that coronavirus in England is now largely an infection among young adults, with cases in the 16 to 24-year-old age range six times more common than in the 50 to 69-year-old age range. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written jointly by Harun Siddiqui and Heather Stewart. The piece is titled, UK Doctors Warn Over Increasing Number of Young People with COVID in ICU. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. UK doctors have said increasing numbers of young people with coronavirus are being admitted to hospital, including to intensive care units, begging them not to suffer unnecessarily and to get the vaccine. Recently, after the majority of COVID restrictions were lifted in England, there were pictures of crowded coffee shops and restaurants filled with customers not wearing face masks or social distancing. Medics raised the alarm that unvaccinated young people urgently needed to protect themselves against infection to avoid serious illness. The warning came as scientists gave a cautious welcome to the fifth day in a row of falling COVID case rates, the first time that cases have seen a sustained fall without a national lockdown. However, this figure does not include the impact of 19th of July easing of restrictions. The UK recorded 29,173 new cases on Sunday, 25th of July, down from 48,161 the week before. But NHS England said one-third of 18 to 29-year-olds had still not had at least one dose of the vaccine, a figure that falls to 1 in 10 for the whole adult population. While young people are generally at a much lower risk of dying from COVID, doctors say they are increasingly witnessing them becoming severely unwell. Dr. Samantha Batroden, senior intensive care registrar, said the patients they were seeing were getting younger and younger. Dr. Samantha Batroden said, The vast majority of those requiring intensive care are unvaccinated. Some of them will die. It is heartbreaking for us, as NHS staff, to watch people suffer unnecessarily, knowing that this almost certainly could have been prevented by the vaccine. She added, "We're seeing patients in their 30s or even in their 20s who are fit and have no other medical problem in intensive care units. As an ICU doctor, I'm begging you to have the vaccine. Please don't let not having the jab become the biggest mistake of your life." Professor Adam Finn, a member of the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization and a professor at the University of Bristol, said there had been close to 200 admissions with a mean age of 40 in the city during the Delta variant wave. Speaking on LBC on Sunday, 25th of July, Professor Adam Finn said, "We have had people under the age of 30 on our intensive care unit and also requiring high level of oxygen therapy. This is not always trivial in young adults. There are younger people really getting seriously ill at the moment, so that's one good reason to think about having the vaccine." He added, "But the other one is, these vaccines now, it's clear, do reduce the risk of not only getting the infection, but passing it on to other people. The latest data from the UK Office for National Statistics shows that coronavirus in England is now largely an infection among young adults, with cases in the 16 to 24-year-old age range almost six times more common than the 50 to 69-year-old age range. Many experts had urged the government to postpone the easing of restrictions to allow more adults to get both COVID doses. On Friday, 23rd of July, Professor Robert West, a health psychologist at University College London, and scientific advisor to the government, accused ministers of allowing infections to rip through the younger population in an effort to bolster levels of immunity before the NHS faces winter pressures. Dr. Adrian Boyle, vice president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, said it was critical young people got vaccinated. Dr. Boyle said that whilst young people getting ill with coronavirus was rare, suddenly there's quite a lot of them, just because there's so much COVID around. Saffron Cordery, the deputy chief executive of NHS Providers, which represents hospital trusts, said members were reporting a much higher proportion of younger patients under the age of 40. Cordery also warned of the risk of long COVID. Government data published last month suggested more than 2 million adults in England had experienced coronavirus symptoms lasting more than 12 weeks, although the risk was found to rise with age. She said, "It is important that everyone, whatever their age, understands the risk of remaining unvaccinated." Dr. Kaveri Jalunwala, co-chair of Doctors Association of United Kingdom, a campaigning and lobbying group, also highlighted the risk of long COVID, having experienced the condition herself. She said, "Even if only 5% of people are getting long COVID, that's going to be a huge number of people having a very debilitating condition that might last for a year or even longer." She added, "It's more debilitating than people realize. People can't do their normal jobs anymore. They can't do normal activities. People struggle to walk or do any kind of exercise. We absolutely recommend everybody to get both vaccines as soon as possible, especially with the Delta variant of the virus just everywhere at the moment." The Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, described levels of infection among young people as alarming. Jonathan Ashworth said, "Ministers must do more to promote vaccination, ensure young people have time off to get jabbed, and open more pop-up vaccination clinics targeting young people. The impact of COVID, and particularly the Delta variant of the virus, on young people is also of increasing concern in other countries. In the Netherlands, for example, curbs on restaurants and coffee shops were reimposed after new cases rose sevenfold. In Australia, the Nobel Prize-winning immunologist Peter Doherty said on Sunday, 25th of July, young people are at considerable risk and at higher risk than with the earlier variants of COVID. Young people shouldn't think they're at no risk or even minimal risk because it's going to kill. The government's proposed introduction of vaccine passports has caused significant backlash among Conservative MPs, and it is unclear whether the government will be able to assemble a majority behind it. Ministers are currently considering whether to make vaccine passports mandatory for Premier League football matches and other events with more than 20,000 attendants, having already announced their introduction for coffee shops, entry and other venues where large crowds gather. Professor Finn suggested the move could backfire and a more gentle approach was needed. He said, if people begin to feel they're being kind of forced against their will to do something, then in a sense that's quite a damaging thing to do because it gives people the impression that vaccination is something being imposed on them from the outside. The Department of Health and Social Care spokesperson said, we have one of the highest COVID-19 vaccine uptake rates in the world. The latest Office for National Statistics data shows 90% of adults under the age of 30 have said they would come forward for a vaccine, and 3 in 5 adults aged between 18 and 24 have already received one dose of the vaccine in England. The spokesperson added, we have worked closely with the NHS to provide information at every opportunity on how to get a vaccine and its benefits, including partnerships with high-profile celebrities, social media platforms, and dating apps to encourage uptake among the younger age groups. The spokesperson added, we're continuing to do everything we can to boost uptake for younger people and urge all those who have yet to book their appointment to do so as quickly as possible to help protect themselves and their loved ones.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.